Just to begin with a settling, letting the body soften. I like to use the image, or kind of, it's almost like a felt image of energy or stress draining from the body. So maybe a deep breath, and then a sense that all the agitation, stress, fear, sadness, anger are just draining down the limbs, down through the legs into the earth. That behind that comes a calming, a settling. This is a very really a very alert or awake kind of settling. So we're not settling into lethargy or dullness. We're releasing everything really that blocks us from having clarity, being truly present. So now we can feel the breath. We can see thoughts appearing and moving through the mind. You can feel our inner life, the emotions, mood. But nothing is capturing us. There is a sense of observing experience rather than being lost in it or struggling with it. This state of balance is called equanimity. Undisturbed. And yet fully, fully here. to be here in this way, to be awake and in a balanced mind state, also takes a kind of effort. Oftentimes, meditation is almost characterized as the form, the effort that we are to make, as though paying attention to the breath were the whole purpose of practice. And that misses the finer point. Finer point of just being aware. Paying attention to the breath is just a tool for cultivating that mind state, that mind state of clarity, and calm. Nonetheless, the breath gives us a good tool, one that's very specific to just try to be aware can be a somewhat vague instruction. So we want to balance an effort to use the form of attention to the breath, with an understanding that that's not the end point, end goal. We use the breath as a way to open into a more spacious mind. Mind that isn't stuck on anything. So then there's this other component, which is the mindfulness of effort and mindfulness of the need for effort. So even as we're trying to be aware, we're also noticing how that trying is playing out. Is that creating more stress? Is it a striving? Or are we not trying enough and drifting into spaciness? This is where the practice becomes more subtle and complex, layered, requiring us to kind of keep track of several different things at once. This is the art of practice, is to learn to track the different elements of practice and then apply the appropriate effort or lack of effort, the appropriate letting go. when we first start to meditate. There's a tendency to look for the specific tools we should use. Asking the question, how do I meditate? That's a useful thing to seek out. But over time, we see the limits of that strategy. The how really depends on us in each moment. We have to develop this broader understanding of practice and different strategies. And this is why experience is so important. We don't just learn to meditate. It's a constant exploration and investigation. Well, those might have been some of the more confusing meditation instructions I've given. I hope that wasn't unhelpful for people. And it kind of goes along with what I'm wanting to talk about today. So that's probably what happened there. Again, good morning, welcome. Just kind of scrolling a little bit, see who's here. For those who have been following along, we're in step six of One Breath at a Time, and the section of the book called Feeling Feelings. And last time I talked about, I guess it was last Tuesday because we had Spirit Rock on Friday, I talked about this encounter, kind of a story of meeting someone who was kind of trying to work with loving kindness as a way of kind of getting rid of certain negative feelings. And so we're trying, we're kind of getting into this really, to me, the heart of practice and of really essential questions about meditation. And those were some of the things that I was, kind of trying to point to in that guided meditation. The question of, how much we can just apply a technique to bring about some specific result. And then, then comes this question, well, what is the result we're trying to achieve? And that really opens up some of the really fundamental questions about meditation practice. And I don't think there are necessarily easy answers with those things. So in this section, I mention Jack Kornfield's book, A Path with Heart, and what he talks about, what he calls insistent visitors. And he says, when any experience of body, heart, or mind keeps repeating in consciousness, it's a signal that this visitor is asking for a deeper and fuller attention. And that, so the reason this section is called Feeling Feelings in the book is that a deeper and fuller attention is feeling the experience. It's not thinking about the experience. It's not analyzing the experience. It's not even necessarily understanding it. So this is, again, what becomes challenging in terms of both teaching and certainly then applying. So I went back to A Path with Heart, and once I started looking at this chapter, and it's chapter 8 in A Path with Heart, it's called Difficult Problems and Insistent Visitors. As I said before, it just sort of, I remember reading this probably 1993, I think I got this book. It was published in 93. I might have got, well, anyway. And I remember reading it. And at that time, I'd been practicing for 12 years. I started, 13 years, but I started practicing with Jack in 1981. And a lot of what he described, it was like he was clarifying what he had tried to teach me on the three-month retreat in 1981. And it felt like a lot was sort of a lot of understanding of what had been a more intuitive process for me opened up as I read his description and as I read this chapter. So if you have this book, I recommend that you go and look at this chapter. And if you don't have it, I recommend that you get this book, A Path with Heart by Jack Kornfield. for me, you know, it probably just landed at the right, maybe just landed at the right moment, but I still think it's one of the most helpful and sort of broad studies of the meditative experience and the spiritual practice. It's you know, the title doesn't even have, even the subtitle doesn't include Buddhism. The subtitle is A Guide Through the Perils and Promises of Spiritual Life. So at times he doesn't really sort of be claiming to give Buddhist teachings, but it's all underpinned by that. So I want to go to this particular piece of this. Again, there's a lot in here that I could get into, but I think this is the heart of it for me, which is a section called Expand the Field of Attention. So I'm going to read a little bit of this. There are a few basic principles for learning how to open our stuck places and release the contradictions of the body of fear, which is something he talks about in the previous section. But the first of these principles is called expanding the field of attention. A repeated difficulty will be predominantly felt in one of the four basic areas of mindfulness. So expanding the field of attention requires that we become aware of another dimension of the insistent visitor and not just notice its predominant face. Now that, let me read a couple more sentences, but this is, I think, what I want to focus on. This is because we are inevitably stuck on a different level from the obvious ones we have been noticing and naming. Releasing will only take place when we can shift from that which is obvious to one of the other levels of awareness. So basically what he's talking about is how when you're meditating, you find yourself stuck in a cycle of thinking. And what you're taught is to notice the thoughts and let them go and come back to the breath, right? That's the technique, that's the form. But what happens with what these insistent visitors is that you do that, but it keeps cycling through. You go back to your breath and the thought comes back again. And you come, you know, oh, there it is. Let me come back. And you realize that you're missing something. That the problem isn't the thought. And that no amount of like forcing yourself back to the breath or trying to hold on to the breath is going to create the like concentration. Your mind's not going to get settled, because you're not seeing the underlying cause. You know, and this is something I talk about so much that many of you who have been on retreat with me are, I'm sure, very familiar with this, but maybe this helps you to see where I kind of was coming from and where I came to this understanding that we realize that because there are some things that are like just repetitive thoughts. For instance, when music plays in the mind a lot, it's usually just because you listen to that music and it's kind of very direct. It's just, okay, there's that song and then there's coming back and there's a song and you're coming back and eventually you can break that habit. There could be just something that you're planning, you know, like the vacation or something. And your mind keeps going to that. And maybe there's no big emotion behind it. It's just that you've been thinking about it a lot, so your mind goes there. But this is something else. This is when there's an underlying emotional state. There is a hook from something. And when you start thinking about it, the thought is really just the manifestation of the underlying state. It's not the thing itself. It's just a sign of the thing. And that's why paying attention to the thought isn't that helpful, because you're not paying attention to the thing. You're paying attention to the sign of the thing. So that's why you have to, as he says, expand the field of attention, go beyond the thought and the breath and realize, oh, there's something else, and discover that. And this is more subtle, right? It's the emotions are much more subtle than thoughts and breath and body. You know, they don't have the same markers. They don't sort of have the same boundaries. You know, that they're not just sort of so easy to categorize. And this is the tricky part about meditation. But when we are able to open to them, it's, and I think this is very much kind of tied with trauma too, that what happens is that we are able to integrate the feeling into our awareness and accept it. Because when it's not seen, when it's hiding behind the thoughts, it's not, there's an inner conflict with it. It's really what the thoughts are a lot of times. And I don't want to say this all the time, but a lot of times this, what I'm describing here is that the thoughts are actually the effort of the mind to control and ultimately suppress the feeling. And so the thoughts are actually the manifestation of aversion or a fear or resistance to the feeling. And so that we're in this state of conflict that's not even seen, it's not even recognized. So when we are able to see it, feel it, then it comes into consciousness, and then it can be held like any other experience. You know, painful experiences can be held when we learn to be mindful, when we cultivate that emotional resilience to, okay, I can be with grief, I can be with loss, I can be with anger. Those things can be there if I'm just mindful of them. But when we're not mindful of them, then they're creating this underlying disturbance that keeps diverting us. And we can see how tied into addiction this is, you know, to get back to the, you know, the underlying purpose of this course. Is it a course? No, I don't know what it is. Our addiction is another manifestation of this inner conflict, this conflict with who we are, with conflict with our feelings, the lack of our ability to integrate our painful feelings and to allow them into our consciousness. We can't deal with them, where there's too much aversion. You know, that's, I mean, I would say addiction is like the extreme case of this. You know, it's not just thinking about, it's not just having a mental state of conflict, but it becomes, that mental state then manifests into our lives, which of course those mental conflicts always manifest in our lives. They manifest as, you know, conflicts in our relationship and in our work, besides the inner self-hatred, the depression, anxiety. They manifest outwardly, of course. But the addiction is such a classic case of this, because addiction is this physical effort to do the thing, same thing that our minds are trying to do, this physical effort to control and suppress the feeling, to transform the feeling into something manageable or desirable. So this process is, you know, very much tied in with recovery. And I guess we could, you know, it occurs to me as I'm saying this that, you know, maybe if we look at the steps, and here we are at step six, that steps four and five are kind of the step version of this kind of effort to integrate or to to shed light on the underlying conflicts that have been unaddressed and have been not integrated, not understood in our lives. There is a certain logic to that, perhaps, and with the steps is that that in steps four and five, there's this looking, really effort to look very closely at what's there. And then step six is when we begin the process of letting go. We're entirely ready to let go. I'm looking at where I want to go here. Let's see. So this is the place where Jack has this idea of the top 10 tunes. He says, on retreats, we call these insistent visitors or difficult repetitive thought patterns the top 10 tunes. He says, normally when thinking arises, we can simply name it thinking. And in the light of awareness, it will vanish like a cloud. However, the top 10 tunes, whether as words, images, or stories, will persist and return no matter how often they are noticed. They play like records, repeating a theme over and over. And then he talks about like naming, giving them like numbers on the top 10 list. But it's sort of silly in a way, and then naming them, the different types of, I think this is, here we have the sort of the inventory part of it. He says, we can use a variation. He says, we can give them a humorous name or title. I have given names to many now familiar aspects of myself, such as the hungry survivor, Mr. Achiever, Attila the Hun, Baby Jackie, Fear of the Dark, the Impatient Lover. In this way, the repeated patterns of fear, sorrow, impatience, or loneliness become more familiar, and I listen to their stories in a friendlier and open-hearted way. Hello, nice to see you again. What do you have to tell me today? Which is kind of like the Buddha saying, I see you, Mara, or the one that people like, which is inviting Mara to tea, right? But then he says, however, this is not enough. And then he goes deeper into this, there's a lot of levels to this. And I need to kind of maybe look a little bit more as how I want to proceed with this. Again, comes back to, as I was talking about during the meditation, effort. What is right effort? How do we meditate? I mentioned that I've been listening to 10% Happier lately, because I'm going to be interviewed on there, and I kind of want to get a feel for how Dan Harris approaches his interviews. And if you've ever listened to that podcast, you might notice that he is really particularly fascinated with meditation techniques. And I, after a while, I find it sort of funny because I think it's a really limited way to think about meditation. And it comes back again to that effort we have to control. This is like what's so tricky about this practice. And, of course, it's an addiction issue too. That, why do we come to meditation? Well, underlying impulse, I want to feel the way I want to feel. Same reason we come to addiction. I want to feel the way I want to feel. And I read the advertising. I saw what it said in the, if you learn to do this, you will be able to, and then it's, you know, manage your emotions better and feel more calm, be more concentrated, have more focus, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So now we've got this situation where it's like, I want something and somebody's offering it to me. If I do this, here, come and take this link and then I'll get it, right? So great. Now I, you know, sign up for the class and I pay my money and it's like, then they tell me how to do it. It's like, okay, great. Now I can meditate. You know, and then like maybe a few days later, 5 minutes later, it's like, wait, it's not working, you know. Or maybe it works for a while, you know, it works for a while. It's like, oh, I got it. I went on a retreat and now I figured it out. But then it stops, you know, at some point, something happens, you know. And so it's like, oh, wait. There's another course to learn this kind of meditation. Now I need to do more loving kindness meditation. It's not mindfulness isn't enough. I need to do, okay. Now, oh, loving kindness. Okay. Now that's really okay. Now I feel good. That's great. You know, now I feel the way I want to feel, you know, got the technique, you know, and then like, you know, you get cut off on the highway and you're screaming at the person. You're like, wait a minute, what happened? I thought I was loving now. I'm not angry anymore. Why am I having this fight with my kids? Like, you know, it's because there isn't a technique for controlling your mind, you know, to make yourself feel the way you want to feel. And, so then we're, you know, it's like, oh, I'll give up. Let's go have a drink. You know, if I can't control it, if I can't get what I want, screw it. I might as well just like enjoy myself in the meantime. Ay, ay, ay. But that's, wait, that didn't work. That really doesn't work. So then realize that the letting go is letting go of control, you know. Letting go of trying to make it be anything. And yet, not stopping making an effort to do the next right thing, as we say. And, you know, this is like grown-up spirituality, right? This is adult spirituality. This is mature spirituality where it's like, I have to do my damnedest. And I have to accept that it's not going to be what I want it to be all the time. How am I going to live with that? I mean, this is a daily challenge, you know. For me, it is. Right now, you know, death doesn't seem like a bad idea. You know, like, oh, you know, if I were dead, I wouldn't have to deal with any of this crap. You know, it's... And then it's like, oh, wait, maybe I should just take a walk, you know. You know, maybe a cup of tea would be a good idea. Maybe I should stop reading this thread on Twitter and, you know, watch the new sitcom. You know, just find something that doesn't drive me mad. And I actually, I'll tell you, you know, something that I decided to do. I'm meditating more. I'm trying to meditate more. You know, sometimes time interferes, but I was listening to Dan Harris. And he said he meditates 2 hours a day. And I was like, wait a minute. I used to meditate 2 hours a day, but I haven't been doing that. So, and I haven't started meditating 2 hours a day, but I did meditate 2 hours on one day, a couple days ago. and I'm committing to meditating more, and which is, you know, not going to fix anything, but creates some potential for sure. And yet sometimes, you know, sometimes it's too much calm. And in these energetic states, you know, like one of the risks of meditation is if you're in a depressive state, meditation actually isn't that great, like extended periods of meditation, because it just gets you duller. If you don't have like the clarity and concentration, you start to, you know, sink more into a dark place. So no easy answers. So this is, you know, my usual optimistic, this will fix everything instruction for you guys. I just think it's really important to be real about this practice and about what we're doing. This is certainly one of the hardest times in our living memory for our world. And certainly for our country. And we can't separate that from our meditation and our recovery. You know, it's all tied in. And yet, boy, this. This practice and this recovery thing are just, they're incredibly powerful, you know. As much as they don't fix everything, when I look at the madness of the world and I realize I'm not there, you know. I'm not there. Myrna can testify to the fact that I can get angry. She saw me yell at somebody last week. But you know, if we can stay out of delusion and have an intention, you know, we're not always going to be able to fulfill it. This is, you know, and to me, you know, step three and right intention are like just so much the keys to these things, because I get thrown off, you know, just moment by moment, and I'm able to come back moment by moment. You know, when I got angry last week and yelled at somebody, and they dropped off the Zoom call, I immediately wrote an email. No, I was still on Zoom, and I went and wrote an email of apology. That to me, that's it for me. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm not going to be an asshole. It's not that I'm going to not never feel depressed. But it's that I'm going to respond. I've got to respond. I've got to keep coming back. You know, I don't know why I haven't written a book yet called Keep Coming Back, but that's the next title. If I can bear to write another book on recovery, it would be called Keep Coming Back, because that to me is the essence of it all. And the January 1 in my new book is to Keep Coming Back. January 2 is Keep Coming Back to the Breath. So, you know, that to me is what's the heart of it all. We just have to keep coming back and keep trying to do what we can do and use techniques that we can use and let go of techniques when they don't work, and, you know, just keep coming back. All right, so we have a few minutes left if anybody wants to jump in and say anything. Oh, wow. Hi, Carol and Nola.
Hi.
Hi.
I was going to ask you if you could recommend a Jack Kornfield book, but now that you've gone into, Path of the Heart?
A Path with Heart.
Yes. Path with Heart. Okay, I'm definitely going to get that one. But yeah. I totally get what you're saying about when we're meditating and our thoughts stray to certain repetitive patterns. I like to call them mini dramas. I can't claim that I coined that. That's from James Redfield in the Celestine Prophecy from years ago. We have these mini dramas we keep, replaying. Okay. So anyway, I am equating that to every so often I have this urge that I need to get my hair cut. And really, I don't need a haircut. There's something else in my life that I need to change, but that thought is manifesting itself in me getting a haircut. Yeah. So I've learned not to run out and get an awful haircut, but to go back and see, am I feeling angry? Am I feeling lonely? Is there some other emotion attached with wanting that? And so that kind of makes sense that I need to focus on what are these recurring straying thoughts that I'm having when I'm meditating? Because there's something deep underlying them. Yeah. And maybe they're just manifesting themselves in wanting ice cream or wanting my old boyfriend back or something like that. There's some other need that I need to fill, and essentially the answer to everything for me is going back to spirituality.
Yeah.
So that really made a lot of sense. And I'm so glad I joined today. Thank you
great.
So much.
All right, Carol, that's really nice. Great to see somebody from New Orleans. Anne, you had your hand up. You gotta demute. You're still muted.
Sorry. Yeah.
That's okay, yes.
After 10 months.
Yeah, I know.
The little screen that you mentioned earlier and our wanting to, was that in the meditation? I don't know. But my urge to want to, the way you said it, the way you want to narrow down all the chaos that's going on and just focus. And so what happened for me, my insight after Friday night, listening to the Spirit Rock, I had the activation that you were talking about. Like I got activated. I was literally insanely, addictively scrolling, doom scrolling.
Doom scrolling, yes.
And when I first heard that term months ago, I was like, that's just stupid. Crazy. And then I realized, I won't get into the long story, but it was funny how I called my, so I said it out loud. I admitted I was powerless. I was completely insanely going back and forth, hitting headlines, going down the rabbit hole, to the detriment of other things in my life. Seriously, it was a problem. Yeah. So on Saturday, I just committed to just, I was so, my heart, it's almost as if, it almost feels as like a broken heart in a way. It's like the physical feeling I have in my chest and it like radiates to the back, And so it's really unreal. And I haven't felt this to this extent in my life. I'm more aware of my body now. Right. So,
right.
And feelings and how they affect me. Yeah. So I do my Qigong practice and I cleanse and clear and I replace with, kind of marinate in positive I haven't been able to meditate as much, but when I do sit, I'm trying to find the balance between movement, mindful movement, and sitting right now. Because sitting almost, my energy level is just kind of off the charts. And so I needed to say that out loud because the news ingesting, it's intoxicating ingesting that those words, those images, and It is. It feels like an addiction. It feels. Yeah.
Absolutely. I have that thing of like judging other people. I don't know, you know, just of like, oh, these crazy people that are just watching Fox News all the time. And then I realized, oh, wait, I'm getting crazy just watching whatever I'm watching and reading, you know, following the people on Twitter that I follow. And exactly, it was like, oh, I'm just, I don't want to admit it. You know, I don't want to admit that I'm just like this mirror image of it because, you know, because like I said, I mean, I'm not going to accept the idea that, you know, Black Lives Matter is the same as QAnon. I mean, just screw you, you know, but, but my mental state and the way I'm engaging it is the same. It is because it's just as you described, it's an addictive pattern and it becomes so embedded in the mind that it's really not helpful. And so it's actually been helpful. Like yesterday I played golf with a friend of my older brother, and this is a guy who voted for Trump, you know, and he belongs to one of Trump's golf courses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a friend of my brother's, you know, I'm going to be friendly with him, you know, we're playing golf. And so I get to like hear him, and he's like completely opposed to Trump right now, he says. In fact, he actually sued Trump for Leona Helmsley when he was, anyway, that's weird stories, right? But nonetheless, he threw out the equivalency thing that I'm, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests, because they attacked police departments and it's just really good for me to be able to talk to somebody like that without losing it, you know, without screaming at them, and I have to reckon with the fact that there's a lot of people who think like this. And if I just write them off as insane and maniacs, and like, you know, there's a lot of people who have these beliefs who are not going to attack the Capitol. You know, like there's degrees here. Like, let me be rational about this. And if I'm going to like live in America, you know, America, I'm going to have to, you know, figure out how to not to hate 50% of the people, you know?
Yes. That's the challenge.
Yeah. And so going down that rabbit hole, that kind of Twitter rabbit hole or whatever, feeds that negativity to where there's no tolerance. And I'm not saying I'm going to buy the equivalency, but I want to like have tolerance for people who are thinking like that, and at least be able to play golf with them, you know, not bang them over the head with a 3-iron, you know.
Yikes. Yeah, no, that. Yeah. Right. And you mentioned getting angry at someone, and for me, the kind of the high point was when my husband's on the phone with an old friend from Israel, and I'm yelling at my husband to tell him what's really going on. You know, this is like the height, and I'm just like, whoa, okay. Yelling.
Right.
So I feel a lot better for the news fast. And I didn't want to admit it. I didn't want to give it up.
No.
But I want to stay sober and healthy. And
yeah.
Can't go back now.
Well, I know. And I always have to remind myself that I'm going to be dead and the news is going to continue on without me. Like, what do I think I'm accomplishing? I'm not changing the news, you know? Well, as Wes would say, if you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own. So, but that could be a problem as well. Well, I'm going to keep going here. If people need to leave, I see some people have ducked off, and I'm sure some people are. I don't have any plans today, so I'm going to take the next two people have their hands up. Aaron, hi. You're still muted.
Hello.
Okay.
Sorry.
Hi, no problem.
Technical difficulties. I just wanted to say, like, I had to write something down you said. You said, if we can stay out of delusion and have an intention. And, you know, I've been in recovery for over 12 years. And I've tried it all. Like, I've done, you know, AA hardcore and like SLAA hardcore. And I spent an hour in a UA meeting before this call. So, you know,
what is that?
There's
what's UA?
Under Earners Anonymous.
Oh, under. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I can relate.
And our number one, you know, the number one thing, symptom of under earners is timekeeping, uh-huh. You know, keeping like, how do we spend our time? And it really, like, that's a tough one for me, because I don't want to like give up anything, you know. I don't want to like but then I'm like, but what am I doing just sitting around watching TV all day? I don't have a job right now. I don't, like, there's all kinds of things. Well, what I've spent time doing for the last 12 years and probably most of my life is trying to figure myself out. And it's a really, I think I love today, because I love the idea that, like, I came to meditation and to 12 steps and to therapy and, you know, just about anything that you can think of to like fix myself so that I could be better, so that I could fit into something, or so that, like, you know, I don't know how to express it eloquently, but I just realized, like, in recent days, literally days, that I don't want to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't want to keep trying to figure this out, fix yeah. this thing.
Yeah.
I just want to be happy
yeah.
and like be nice to people and be open to possibilities that I can. I like what you said. It's about like it was like being diligent every day on something, but also realizing that it might not be exactly what you thought it was going to be or what yeah. you wanted.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's just kind of, it's hard to sit here in that kind of muddy water feeling of like, well, I don't really want to do anything right now. I don't really, like, I know I'm supposed to be doing this, I'm supposed to be doing that, and I can do this little thing and this little thing. And, but sometimes I just don't want to do anything at all. And then when I sit and meditate, those little thoughts come up, those little, like, you know, like you said, it's like, is it a thought like, oh, let it go? And then, or is it like something that's deeper than that? And like trying to really sit and be aware of when I'm so self-aware, like that I trick myself into not realizing that the depth in which I need to take that awareness,
mm-hmm.
you know, like where I need to get to.
Mm-hmm.
To actually realize how to feel that, how to understand what it is. Because I'm just like, oh, I know what it is. Cool. I'm, you know, moving
yeah.
on.
Yeah, there's something, there's a difference between self-consciousness and self-awareness too, you know. I also say, like, the feeling like I don't want to do anything is usually a symptom of depression, you know. And that, you gotta, that needs to be, you gotta work against that. My experience, I mean, 'cause I'm a depressive, and if I think I should not, I don't feel like doing anything, that's a big clue that I need to do something. And it doesn't have to be anything special. It could just involve doing the dishes, you know, but it's like, I need to do something, because that when that energy just gets stuck like that, I just go down. That's a dangerous place. It's not about controlling the state. It's about not letting it's about the energetic aspect of it, you know, that gets out of control, takes over.
And that's a problem for me, because when I am doing stuff, I'm just doing it like, right. Like, and it's just this like, and then when I stop doing stuff, it's like, it's the inertia law, right?
Everything. Yeah. So that's where mindfulness, trying to bring more mindfulness in to like, what is the, to really feeling that the energy that's behind the action, so that it's like, I want to do this thing, but I notice that I want to do this action or this activity, but I notice that the energy underneath it is this grasping, you know, or fearful or whatever energy. Now, can I let go of that energy and still do the action? So that means you have to learn how to apply mindfulness to the underlying states, to the impulses in real time. And that takes intention. It takes practice, but it's not, you know, some unmanageable thing to accomplish, but it's something to investigate. Like, oh, can I start to like separate out the action from the anxiety behind the action?
Thank you.
Yeah. Chris?
Hey, Gavin. Thanks so much for the session today.
Yeah.
I'm based in Los Angeles right now, but I used to live in San Francisco and spent a lot of time at Spirit Rock.
Nice.
So my question, actually, you partially answered it just now, but it's in relation to these visitors that we don't want to become the top 10 playlist that keeps playing. And you know, I have a sense of what that playlist is, and like my taste in music, the top 10 changes as time goes on, right. Constantly. But once I do start to identify those, I'm wondering, you know, what I do, since, you know, whenever sort of these thoughts come into my head, my sort of intention is to sort of recognize them and sort of bring my awareness back to my anchor point. And as Cornfield mentioned in the reading, with a lot of the thoughts, you can just say thinking,
right.
And they'll pass, but with other ones, they won't. And so is the suggestion that at a certain point, instead of bringing your awareness back to the breath, you actually change that focus and start to do the investigation?
Yes. So yes, it is. And there's a few things that can happen in there. First of all, once you see it's there and you're familiar with it, it's acceptance. That's like the primary thing, because the problem generally is the rejection of it. It's like, it's not enough to just see it's there, because there's still this, very often, if it's an underlying thing, there's still this underlying rejection of it, this underlying judgment of it or conflict with it in some way. And so we have, it's the recognizing, and this is kind of the RAIN. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's like a Tara Brach loves it. So it's like, okay, I see it, but now I have to turn towards myself and see what is the felt experience of it. And the felt experience is usually some kind of tension or rejection. And so that's where I go, oh, well, that's okay. Like, this just sucks that this is just like who I am, or this is just what's arriving right now. I'm familiar with it. I don't have to reject it. I might not like it, but I don't have to reject it. It's just like, okay. And so we work on that acceptance. you know, obviously a big 12-step idea. But there's, you know, we really have to work at that process of acceptance, because there is a mental element to it that's kind of saying, oh, like, it's not my fault that I have these negative states. It's not my, you know, that's a sort of acceptance on that level. This is how things are. It doesn't do me any good to fight it. All that kind of mental acceptance. And then there's the felt acceptance, is the, oh, can I bring like a softness to this? Or what does it mean to be bring loving kindness to this? Or however, whatever triggers that emotional letting go that you can bring to that. So once that's happened, then you've changed your relationship to it, right? Which is one of the things we talk about with practice, right? We're not trying to change our thoughts. We're trying to change our relationship to our thoughts. Same with feelings. We're not trying to change our feelings. We're trying to change our relationship to our feelings so that we're not in conflict with our feelings. So the recognition and then the acceptance allows us to, okay. And then the thing is that this is a persistent cycle, right? That thought comes up again, the feeling is there again, I have to go through the process again of accepting. It's not like, oh, I did it once, now I accept that. It's like, oh, this is deeply embedded in my consciousness, in my psychology. And so I have to kind of this becomes part of my, for me, it's like, oh, this is like this is my mindfulness practice. This is the central aspect of my mindfulness practice, noticing when the crap comes up and accepting it, letting it go, you know, and then, oh, there it is again. Oh, what do I do now? And sometimes, as I was saying, sometimes it means I need to get up and do something physical. You know, I need to do something with my body, because it's not just a mental or a mindfulness exercise. Like sometimes the mind state is because I haven't been moving my body enough, or because I've been focusing my mind, as Anne was talking about, on really negative things. I need to focus on something else, And I think that the pandemic makes this all the more difficult, because there are so few opportunities to break. So many of us in such limited behavioral cycles or life cycles. It's like there's upstairs in my house, there's upstairs and there's downstairs, you know, there's going outside or staying inside, and then I could go to the store, but you know, because sometimes like shopping is like, oh, that's a good way. Like, yeah, but if I go to the store, like I might get COVID, you know, and it's like, wow, like it's very limited. So there aren't sort of the natural breaks for us. You go to, you know, going to work, go to the office, you know, wow, your mood changes, you know, when the office is just the same place where you are. So, yeah.
And would you recommend that this investigation is done just for these most pernicious thoughts that come in, or should we be doing this for every visitor that comes up? Mm. I almost feel like if I tried to do it for every sensation, every feeling, I might sort of get distracted from the sort of original intentions.
Yeah. So if you're on a retreat, you know, you do really try to apply this in this moment by moment, like really noticing the subtleties. In our daily lives, most of us aren't going to be able to do that. And as you suggest, it kind of would become like an OCD kind of behavior where it's like, wait, I'm supposed to be actually functioning here. And instead I'm stopping every 2 seconds to examine myself. So yeah, generally it's like catch those things. Boom. Whoa, what's going on? Where? Yeah. So good question.
Thank you, Kevin.
Okay, Chris, thanks. Thank you, everybody. Those people who hung out. This will be the extra long recording. Obviously, I think this is really important. And obviously, some of you guys either have nothing else to do with your day, or you also think it's important. So nice to be with people. And, stay safe. you know, I think we're going to be okay. Yeah.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, everyone.